ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। यू वुड लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल द डिवोटीज एंड गेस्ट्स टू श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ मंदिर this rainy Sunday afternoon. It's unique. And today, by the blessings and prayers of the devotees, I would like to speak on the subject matter of the upcoming festival tomorrow of Dashera. Vijay Dashami is the day when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Ramchandra, defeated the demon Ravan in a huge, powerful battle. And it is also the day when the Pandavas, after 13 years of exile, came out for the first time. Of course, it was Arjuna who defeated the entire host of the Kurus with Uttar Kumar as his charioteer on this very day of Vijay Dashami. It is also the day when Vidyarambha, or education in Vedic culture, begins on this auspicious day. And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also began his education on this day of Vijay Dashami. This battle between Lord Ram and the demon Ravan, and the victory of Lord Ram, signifies the victory of giving pleasure over pain. The victory of jubilation over lamentation. Because Ravan means one who makes others cry. Ravana. And Lord Ram, the word Rama means one who is a reservoir of all pleasure, or one who gives pleasure to others. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse when he talks about the real pleasure that the devotees experience. What is that?
Ramante yogito nante satyananda chidatmani iti ramapadenasau param brahma vidiyate.
It is explained that the mystics, the yogis in devotion, they experience real pleasure. Satyananda chidatmani. There is something called mithyananda and something called Satyananda. Mithyananda is that pleasure which is concocted. It is not there, but one has to convince oneself that it is there. Mithyananda. Chid. On the other hand, Satyananda is real experience of pleasure, joy within the heart. And what is its characteristic? How it is experienced? Chid Atmani. It is experienced on the level of the soul. The pleasure of the soul is Satyananda, and the pleasure of the senses, which is also some kind of pleasure, is Mithyananda, false pleasure, because it's superficial and it is temporary. Where do the devotees or the yogis experience the pleasure from? Iti Rama Padenaso, from the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is a reservoir of all pleasure, and therefore the Supreme Absolute Truth is called Ram. Param Brahma Api Diyate is also called Ram. So in this battle, when Lord Ram wins, it is the battle of giving pleasure and jubilation over the loss and the removal of lamentation, the killing of Ravan, the demoniac propensities which he represents, like lust, pride, greed, envy, anger and illusion within one's heart. This whole world is revolving, and all the human beings within this world who are existing are submerged in an ocean of lamentation. It is said that in the deep core of one's heart, most people don't respect themselves. Although externally they may be showing so many smiles and they may be expressing their own glories, in the deepest core of one's heart, they don't respect themselves, most people. Because they're always having a lamentation and a regret for what they don't have. For those people who are tall, they feel, oh, I'm just too tall. Maybe if I was a little short, then I would be one with the crowd. Those who are too short, they feel that if I was a little tall, then at least I could hang on to the local train. You know, then I would have some fresh air on top. And those who are fat, struggling their whole life to become a little bit more thin. And those who are thin, they are struggling to get some more muscle fat so that they can have some more energy. Those who are fair, they put suntan lotion, try to become dark. Those who are dark, they want to put fair and lovely and become bright. In the heart, there's always some lamentation or the other that troubles the living entity. And thus, they cannot respect themselves. In fact, Madan Gopal Prabhu the other day in the Bhagavatam class was explaining how the animal kingdom is governed by the principle of fear. The animals are always fearful. The human beings, they are always in lamentation. And the higher beings, like the gods in the heavens, the demigods, they are always in illusion. See, this material world is compared to a kaleidoscope. What is a kaleidoscope? It is the game that children play with. It's something like a binocular, a small round thing, in which there are some glass bangle pieces. And every time we change it, the bangle pieces change, and because of the light that's reflected, a particular design or a pattern is observed. So this material world is compared to the kaleidoscope, and just as the kaleidoscope changes and new patterns are created and seen, similarly by the force of time, this entire material world is changing, changing, changing. And it shows so many varieties of patterns and situations to the living entity who is looking at the kaleidoscope of this material world. Those glass pieces within the kaleidoscope are compared to so many varieties of objects in this world, which are constantly changing and producing a picture for the living entity. Now, in the heavens, when the material world changes or the kaleidoscope changes, there are so many attractive designs that are seen. So just as a child is very attracted to see those designs within the kaleidoscope, the demigods, they are attracted by the varieties of opulences in the heavens. And one after the other, there are so many opulences that they become attached to it. However, they are not fully satisfied by these attractions. Why is that? For two reasons out of many. The first one is that these designs, patterns, always keep changing. They are an illusion because they are there for some time and then they are gone. It's temporary, it's changing. And second is, between those two changes of attractions, many times there are demons which attack the demigods and create so much anxiety for them that they have to run away from there. So yes, they have a lot of attractions, a lot of opulences, but when the demons attack, it's a very painful situation for them. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, he was not impressed at all when Lord Narasingadev was trying to offer some benedictions to him. He said, what are the use of benedictions to me? What will I gain from anything in this world, my Lord? I have seen that even the great gods in the heavens, they are not happy always. I have seen it with my own eyes, he says. Drishta maya divi vibho khila dishnyapanam ayushriya vibhava icchati yanjanoyam yesmat pituhu kupita hasa vijrimbitu bru Visfurjitena lulita satute nirastaha.
It's an amazing realization that Prahlad Maharaj is sharing. He's saying that with my own eyes, Drishta Maya Divi Vibho. With my own eyes, I have seen Drishta Maya Divi Vibho, the great demigods, Akhila Dishnya Panam, who are the controllers of big, big, huge planetary systems. Akhila Dishnya Panam.
And what are they having? They are having such wonders that the common people of this world are envying them for, desiring desperately.
Ayushriya Vibhava Ichchati Yanjanoyam. Yanjanayam, the ordinary people of this world, what do they desire?
Ayuhu,
long life. Shriyaha, great opulences. Vibhavaha, huge amount of control. Ichchati, that which they desire, the demigods have in an unlimited form compared to them. But those demigods, like Indra, Chandra, Surya, Vayu, those powerful demigods, when they would come in front of my father, Yesmat Pituhu, Pitu means his own father, when his father would just do two small things, Kupitahas Vijrimbrita Bru, Kupitahas, laugh sarcastically, ha ha ha, like demons, you know, sometimes, and Vijrimbrita Bru, raise his eyebrows,
Visfurjitena Lulita Satute Nirastaha,
they would be finished. Just when Hiranyakashipu would raise his eyebrows or laugh sarcastically, these demigods would tremble and they would run and flee in all the directions. And Hiranyakashipu would chastise them, you foolish demigods. So I have seen that their opulence, their great power, their great longevity is of no use, because all those attractions are temporary and they keep them bound in the illusions. Then come the humans who are absorbed in lamentation. See, when the human beings look through the kaleidoscope, when the material world changes, the kaleidoscope changes, out of so many varieties of visions, one such vision is very attractive. And when they see that, they feel, okay, this is success. I have achieved it. Life is great. Live life king size. Of course, they don't realize eventually they'll have to die ant size, and next life become dog size or cat size, you know, if they live a sinful life. But the fact is, when they see that one attractive sight in the kaleidoscope of the material world, it enchants their hearts. And then, when the kaleidoscope keeps changing, the things of this material world keep changing, they keep struggling to achieve that one experience that they had where they really, really enjoyed material, some material pleasure. And therefore, the motto of the people of this world is, try and try and try until you succeed. Why do they say that? Because once they have experienced some kind of pleasure, and then the world keeps changing, but they're not experiencing the pleasure again. So then they keep inspiring each other, try and try until you succeed. Why do we find people changing jobs? Because of a lack of job satisfaction. Why do we find people going from restaurants to restaurants? In fact, Srila Prabhupada noticed in Bombay that practically every third shop is a restaurant. And on Sundays, they're just population explosion, over-exploding. So many people, they just come to eat outside. Why? In fact, the Hare Krishnas sometimes we are blamed that you people have the same kind of hairstyle throughout the year, throughout your life. You have the same kind of cloth style. Your Lord also stands in the same threefold bending form. And the same mantra you chant before the class also and after the class also. And by chance you wake up in the morning and come early for Mangalarti, again we hear the same Hare Krishna Maha mantra. On your beads also you are chanting the same mantra. And you go out and distribute the same kind of prasad. Boring life. Same kind of things again and again and again. Just look at us. We have such a variety. We can eat where we want. We can go different types of movies we can see. We can go to different types of places. We need a change in life. Variety is the spice of life. That may be true for those who do not experience joy in what they have. Because they do not have satisfaction in what they are experiencing, therefore they need a change. The very fact that devotees can day in and day out worship the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, chant the same Mahamantra, honor the same Prasad, wear the same clothes for the pleasure of the Lord, proves that they are experiencing some kind of bliss and taste in that. Sometimes even devotees ask, you know, I'm hearing these classes again and again, and I'm not experiencing any positive pleasure, joy, bliss, etc. If that was the truth, then why would we be here? The very fact that on a Sunday afternoon, in spite of it raining so much, in spite of the nice rest that we would have had, still we came here to the temple, we are at least intellectually convinced that if I continue this process, then I will experience a higher taste. And we have experienced some higher taste, which has brought us here again. So, because human beings are absorbed in lamentation, trying to fight hard, work hard to achieve that one little bit of insignificant pleasure that they once enjoyed, that's why they keep changing, trying to again achieve it. And just in case, if someone does achieve another drop of that material pleasure, which is very insignificant and tiny, but if he or she just achieves it, then such a person is called successful. Immediately that person will pen the thoughts down, produce some success literature. I achieved this little bit of drop of pleasure again. I am successful. And so many people will read those self-help books. How can I achieve that one little drop of pleasure again? But it's tiny, insignificant pleasure, absorbed in huge forms and experiences of lamentation. If hard work was simply the cause of success, then the hathgadi walas, the thela walas, they would be all successful because they are also working so hard. But that is not simply the mark of success. It is impossible. The reason is because Madan Gopal was explaining very interesting that just like different people travel in different vehicles, they all are forced and conditioned by those vehicles. Like for example, if someone is traveling by a cycle, now we cannot expect that person to travel at 100 kilometers an hour, 200 kilometers an hour. Not possible. The cycle has its own speed. If someone is traveling by car, somebody is traveling by train, then they have different speeds by which they can travel. Similarly, those who are demigods, having demigod bodies, they experience many illusions and attachments in the kaleidoscope and the sea of the material world. Those who have human bodies, the bodies are filled with lamentation. It's the nature of the body to experience lamentation in the human form. Therefore, in spite of making all types of varieties of changes within this world, changing jobs, changing life partners, changing bodies, changing friends, changing educational degrees, changing eating at restaurants, one may keep changing all one's circumstances. But if the body itself is full of lamentation, then what can one do? One has to experience it in the human form of life. There is only one solution, and that is to join the army of Lord Ramchandra. Because Lord Ram is the giver of pleasure. And he, on this day of Dasera, has conquered over this ocean of lamentation, personified by Ravan, the anarthas within our heart. And then the animals, they are absorbed in fear. They simply live for existence. And they're always fearful. When anybody destroys my existence, that's all. He was explaining that, you know, when sometimes animals fight over a piece of bread or a bone, you don't find the dog sitting at the corner of the street feeling very depressed that I lost the fight. They don't experience any depression or loneliness. Oh, nobody's asking me. How are you? Nobody is expressing any loving gestures with me. No, you just see the dogs moving around on the streets, or we don't see some dogs coming together and having some empathic exchanges of love, some listening, you know, some sharing, understanding. No, they don't have those. They don't experience that lamentation, depression, suffering. In fact, Gaurang Prabhu generally jokes like this, that many times students and working men traveling in Bombay trains look at dogs lying on the station and they see, wow, it's a dog's life. Just see the dog lying. Everyone's running to catch the train, trying to fit inside somehow or the other. And the dog is lying so relaxed. He doesn't even worry how many people are running, coming and going. That people have to worry that they don't step on the dog. We've experienced that. The dog is just so relaxed. He will not even open one eye to see, maybe I should sit this way, that way. No fear, no anxiety, no frustration, loneliness, depression. It's a dog's life. Even a dog's life in Bombay is considered to be great. So what is the human form of life? Quite sad. So animals are absorbed in fear. They don't worry about lamentation and such kind of emotions. And demigod life is absorbed in illusion. Now because we fall in the human category, mostly, there are two-legged animals also. But human beings, why do they experience so much lamentation? Why? Why is the world crying in grief? In fact, one devotee was explaining that when we chant the Samsara Davanar prayers in the morning, Samsara Dava Nalalida Loka Tranaya Karunya Gana Ganatvam, that this material world is compared to a forest fire. So where is this fire? Do we see the buildings on fire? Do we see people on fire? Do we see the environment on fire? No. In fact, most of the times, there is no fire. Rarely do we see fire in this world. In fact, Radhanath Maharaj was explaining that in Chicago, one time, there was a fire station in which a fire engine had not come out for 200 years. That machine. So fire is not always seen in this material world. It's rarely seen. So why do we say that this material world is like a forest fire burning and leaping in flames? It is explained that the subtle bodies of people are on fire. If we could hear the sound in people's minds, now we are so many of us sitting here in this temple hall, and there's just one major sound that's coming from the speakers. That's because I'm speaking with my mouth. But if my mind could be heard by all of you, if all of our minds could be heard by each other, if in the general public we could hear people's minds, it's like a raging ocean. It's like a forest fire. People are so frustrated. The kind of dialogue that constantly goes on in their mind is so miserable. Scientists, psychologists say 90 to 95% of people's thoughts are negative. They're constantly cursing themselves. Right from the time they wake up in the morning. Why did you wake up late? Because you slept late. Now you woke up late, your back is spinning, stomach is spinning. Whole day is ahead of you. This job has to be done, that job has to be done. It's constantly going on within one's mind. So why do living entities, human beings, feel so much lamentation? That Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodho bijayate. He says when one contemplates sense objects, dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangat teshu pajayate, one develops desire to associate with them, intense desire. And when that desire is frustrated, actually that desire creates a craving for association of that object. And when the desire is frustrated, kamat krodho bijayate, then frustrations, lamentation, anger, suffering. Why is this desire given in the heart? This desire is given in the heart to love Krishna, to offer ourselves to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to love Him. But when we repose these desires in objects of this world, then we become frustrated. So then one may ask, why do we become frustrated when we repose our desires in the objects of this world? That is because this world is designed for that purpose. This world has been designed to frustrate us. Therefore, in our frustrations, sufferings and lamentations, if we can come to this realization that this is what I was destined to achieve, then one has achieved success in that state of frustration and lamentation. However, if one thinks, oh, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I could not enjoy properly. Next time I'll try better. Let's make things better together. Then one is lost, again in the whirlpool of this material world.
in one seminar that we were one time doing, there was a skit that we presented to the participants. And in the skit, there was one personality called Mr. Vimudhatma, who at 9 o'clock in the night had a movie to see. 9 to 12 show, you know, these late night shows. So he came rushing from office into his home, quickly gobbled up some dinner, and then he ran out of the house, came down to his bike to go for this movie. Oh, he was in so much anxiety because he forgot the keys of his bike. He ran up to his house, he was searching in his drawer, he was searching on the bed, he was searching all over the place, cursing himself, cursing the keys. And then suddenly he heard a noise and he realized, oh, it's in my own pocket. So he took out the keys from his pocket, he was very happy, he ran down and he put the keys inside the bike and started kicking. Kicking, 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 the bike did not start. Started cursing the bike, stupid bike, at the time when I need you, it don't start. And then he took a deep breath and one big kick and the bike started. Got into the bike, very restlessly was driving. This is a skit, he's running around. And then, the bike stops in the middle of the street. Oh, he's so much more frustrated, this stupid, most useless bike. Fortunately, he sees a mechanic shop just nearby and he pushes his bike to the mechanic's shop. Now here the mechanic is busy doing something, it's the last assignment of his day. And this fellow shouts at the mechanic, I have come, please repair my bike quickly. So the mechanic just coolly looks behind and he just doesn't pay attention, continues his work. This person becomes furious. Vimudhatma is shouting, can't you understand? I'm in a hurry. Can't you look at me? Please immediately repair my bike. So he says, okay, okay. Comes, repairs his bike in a few minutes. Takes 20 rupees. Vimudhatma is on his way. And just at 9 o'clock, Vimudhatma reaches the theater. And his friend is standing outside with his head hanging in shame. Right next to his friend is the balcony where the tickets are sold, and there is a big board over there, house full. So this Vimudhatma parks his bike, runs to his friend and he shouts at him. He said, I hope you bought the tickets. He says, it's 9 o'clock, I'm waiting for you since half an hour, and just 2 minutes back, this window closed, and I was thinking whether I should buy the ticket or not, but then just before it closed, they put the board outside, house full, and I'm about to leave. So he slapped his friend tight. He said, you fool, could you not guess that I must have been delayed because of some bike problems? And he fought with him and his friend fought with him. And that's how that skit ended. So we asked the audience, why did Vimudhatma curse his bike? Why was he angry at his bike? And naturally they answered, that because he had a desire to go and watch the movie. Which was, the desire was getting frustrated and therefore he was getting angry. Why did Vimudhatma blow up at the mechanic? Why was he restlessly shouting at the mechanic? Was it the mechanic's fault? No. Because Vimudhatma had a desire to go and see the movie and his desire was getting frustrated, therefore he was angry at the mechanic. Why did Vimudhatma fight with his friend? Was it his friend's fault? No, it was his desire to see the movie which was frustrated. So introspectively thinking, we may come to this conclusion that many times we become angry, frustrated, and depressed with the things of this world, situations in this world, people in this world. But the fact of the matter is that it's our own desires that have become frustrated, because of which we are angry, upset. It is no use simply blaming the people, blaming the situations, blaming the things of this world. Just like Vimudhatma was frustrated because of not being able to watch the TV, and he was the movie, and he was taking out his frustration on the bike, the mechanic, and his friend. Similarly, it is our own unfulfilled desires which cause frustration and lamentation. And instead of fighting with the unfulfilled desires, instead of fighting with our own conditionings, we fight with the people of this world. Two personalities personify these unfulfilled desires. And we will discuss about both of them today. First is Duryodhan and second is Ravan. It is explained that Duryodhan was burning so much in envy after seeing the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhishthir Maharaj that he wanted to enjoy all those opulences that Yudhishthir Maharaj was enjoying. And he actually felt like committing suicide. Just see the nature of these unfulfilled desires. These unfulfilled desires, either they want to destroy the person who has got those objects of enjoyment, or these desires force you to destroy yourself because you don't have those objects of enjoyment. Either way, it is destructive. So Duryodhan, because he could not defeat Yudhishthir Maharaj, he had tried to kill the Pandavas in so many ways previously, in the House of Lack, poisoning Bhima. So he was burning in envy and he thought, I'm going to commit suicide. My life is useless. But then Shakuni and all his ministers, they convinced him that no. We will give you an idea by which you will be able to win over all the wealth of Yudhishthir Maharaj. And thus there was this game of dice. And Yudhishthir Maharaj lost not only his kingdom, but all his five brothers and the chaste Draupadi. Finally, Draupadi was brought in the court. And dishonorably, she was disrobed. Sometimes people ask this question, that if Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and if Draupadi is Krishna, such a great devotee, then why did Krishna allow Draupadi to go through such an insult? It's the epitome of insult that a human being could experience. Of course, Govind Prabhu is explaining that in Kali Yuga, this is not considered an insult, this is considered glory. It's depicted in the movies. It's glorious. You come in the newspapers, you come in the magazines, if you're disrobed, everyone watches, people pay for it, and you become a superstar, polluting the minds of millions. But for a chaste lady like Draupadi, that is high class, to never be seen by anyone. Surya na Pashyati. That was the class of the ladies of Vedic times. See, high class people are not seen by everyone. Because they're high class. Very few people can meet them, see them. So if Surya na Pashyati, if the sun's rays cannot touch them, even the gods in the heavens do not have audience with these chaste personalities. These powerful ladies brought to the court and disrobed in front of her own husbands, in front of her own seniors, in front of an entire assembly. Extremely painful. Why did Krishna put her through this agonizing experience? It is explained that this episode was enacted in the Mahabharata just to show the glories of the devotees, the Pandavas. The Pandavas were such great devotees of the Lord that they would not perform an unvirtuous act, a sinful act, for any reason. In fact, they were ready. Yudhishthir Maharaj was always the well-wisher of the Kauravas, Ajatashatru. There was never an enemy born of his. He would not consider anybody his enemy. He was such a well-wisher of the living entities. And Arjuna, after going through all this, when he came to the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and he saw the Kauravas on both sides, the Pandavas were also ultimately part of the Kuru dynasty. He said, Krishna, okay, let's forgive them. Compassion overwhelming him. He cannot see that all his brothers, grandfathers, grandsires, relatives being killed in such a huge battle. He said, we will live in the forest. Forget it. Such forgiving personalities, such divine personalities, what would it take to incite their anger so that the Kauravas would be killed? Only if Draupadi was insulted. And therefore, this pastime was enacted to show the power of chaste ladies. How, if even a slight mark is brought about on their character, then entire dynasties can be destroyed. the world history will be changed. That is Mahabharata, the history of Greater India. After the war, the history of the world changed. All because Draupadi's hair was touched by Dushasan. And of course, by the evil scheming plans of Duryodhan. Now, the Pandavas are sent to the forest. That's not enough. The unfulfilled desires of Duryodhan are so much that he wants to go to the forest and show the Pandavas how much he's enjoying. Just look at his sinful desires. It's not, he's so much suffering in envy that he wants to, like they say, suffering seeks company. He wants to actually show others how much he's enjoying to cover up for the inner insecurities and envy that he's feeling. So he goes with his whole army and camps aside next to the river where the Pandavas are performing yajna. And there he puts up big tents where there are so many facilities for enjoyment, and they're having a good time just to incite the Pandavas that see how much you're suffering and see how much we are enjoying. After some enjoyment, Duryodhan and his party, they enter into the lake to have a refreshing bath. That lake was presided over by the Gandharvas. It belonged to them. So the Gandharvas stopped them. Said, stop. You cannot enter here. You are ordinary human beings. You have to go and take permission of the chief of the Gandharvas if you want to bathe here. Now, being Kshatriyas, they are not going to go and ask anybody. So they forcibly entered the lake. And then the Gandharvas came and they completely routed the army of Duryodhan, caught Duryodhan like a slave, and they were about to slay him. Few of the surviving Kauravas, they ran on the other side of the river and they begged Yudhishthir Maharaj and the Pandavas, please, please, help us. Our prince has been caught. The Gandharva king, Chitrasena, Chitraratha has caught them, caught him. So Yudhishthir Maharaj, because he was performing a sacrifice, he had taken a vow to not become angry. Therefore, he requested his second brother, Bhima, Bhima, you go and you fight. When Kshatriyas are requested for help, when people surrender to us, it is our solemn duty to go and help them. Bhima, he was just scrubbing his hands. His face had a big, huge smile. He was about to leap in joy. He said, all these years, what I wanted to personally do, the Gandharvas have done that. And you think I am going to go and help them? Forget it. No way. No way I'm going. And Bhima was beside himself with joy. Now, understanding his mood, Yudhishthir Maharaj did not pursue further and requested Arjuna, you please go and save Duryodhan. And then Arjuna went and single-handedly defeated the Gandharvas and caught Duryodhan. Now, what was the logic that Yudhishthir Maharaj gave to Arjun and convinced him? That shows the magnanimity of his heart. Yudhishthir Maharaj told Arjun that when it is them and us, they are 100 and we are 5. But when others attack, we are 105. Because we are a part of the same family. That was his magnanimity. He would never envy or try to cause hate, harm to anyone. After staying in the forest for 12 years, for 1 year, the Pandavas had to stay in Agyatvas, incognito, in disguise, and they decided to stay in Viratadesh. Duryodhan was impatient. He desperately wanted to find the Pandavas because the rule of the dice game was that if the Pandavas are found in that 1 year of disguise, when they had to stay incognito, then again 12 years they would have to go in forest. So all his spies were sent all over the world to find where would these 5 powerful brothers take shelter, hide themselves. After a long time of search, when these spies came back, they reported that we could not find the Pandavas, but we have recognized some unusual symptoms in Viratadesh. We see that there is so much prosperity over there. The cows are so happy and they are growing by the millions in number. The harvest is bountiful. The seasons are wonderful. Nobody is suffering in anxiety
There are no fights in that kingdom. People are all happy. We do not know why. And naturally, they guessed that because Yudhishthir Maharaj's lotus feet must have touched that kingdom, definitely that kingdom is prospering so much. So the Kauravas, along with their entire army, decided to attack Virat Desh and flush out, find out the Pandavas. Now they captured all the cows of the Virata and they threatened to attack the city. So all the farmers, they came running. And at that time, the Maharaj Virata, he had gone to fight another battle. So his son Bhuminjay, he was sitting on the throne. And he was requested that you are such a powerful hero. You are the prince who is always glorified by our king. You please come and help us, save us. Bhuminjay, being glorified in the palace in front of all the men and women, became very proud. And he said, yes, it is a fact that I am as powerful as Arjuna. And single-handedly, I can destroy the host of the Kauravas. I shall go and fight. The only problem is, my chariot driver has recently been killed, so I need another chariot driver. So hearing this, Briyanalla, who was Arjuna in disguise, the eunuch who was teaching Uttara, the daughter of the king of Virat, he quickly went and told Sendri, who was Draupadi in disguise, and said, Sendri, you quickly go and tell Uttar Kumar that I will act as his chariot driver. So when Sendri, in front of the entire court, she said, Bhuminjay, you don't have a chariot driver. When I was working for the Pandavas, I had seen that one time, Briyanalla, because he was a eunuch, had once driven the chariot of Arjuna. And in fact, even in the Khandav forest, in the fight against the gods, Briyanalla was there. So you must take Briyanalla along with you as a chariot driver. Now this puffed up Bhuminjay even more. He said, okay, even if I have Briyanalla with me, no problem. I shall go and fight all the Kurus myself alone. And he took his chariot, took Briyanalla and left. All the palace maidens, they told him when he was just leaving that, oh Lord of ours, please make sure that when you defeat all the Kurus, you collect their silks so that we can make nice garments for our dolls. And like that, being puffed up by all these glorifications by the palace maidens, he left that place in vanity, in his craziness. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains that man is good, woman is good. But when they come together, then that combination can create a different experience. In fact, in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that when Prahlad Maharaj was touring all over the world, he came across an interesting personality. He was fat, effulgent, looked well-fed, looked very intelligent, had the power to speak sweet, eloquent words. But he was lying there like a dumb and deaf man, would not speak anything. So Prahlad Maharaj asks this person, the Avadhut Brahman, that you're such an intelligent person and you're looking that people in this world are acting and running around and performing so many activities for their enjoyment. Why are you not following them? Why are you simply lying over here as a lazy person? And still, how are you so fat? Prabhupada explains, when one eats a lot and is complacent, then naturally one becomes very fat. But this personality, it seemed that he was very austere. He would not do anything. But still he was fat. How? And why was he not working? So then this Brahman, he gives his realization. He says, I'm just lying over here and I'm looking at the people of this world. And I'm noticing that every person on this planet is performing activities for two reasons. To increase one's pleasure and to destroy one's suffering. However, Because they are so much absorbed in trying to increase their pleasure and destroy their suffering, they are not seeing the result which they are getting. And he says, Tatrapi dampatinam cha sukhayanya panuttaye karmani kurvatam drishtva nivrittosmi viparyayam. He is giving the reason why he is not acting. Nivrittosmi viparyayam. Why I am nivritta? Why I am not acting? He is saying that because man and woman come in this world together and they unite hoping that they will become very happy and diminish their distress. Tatrapi dampatinam cha. Husband and wife come together and they unite and they feel that we will enjoy. Sukhayanyanupattaye. We will increase so much pleasure and finish our suffering. Karmani kurvatam drishtva. But I am seeing drishtva that exact opposite result is coming. Instead of their suffering diminishing, their suffering is increasing and their enjoyment is diminishing. Prabhupada explains in the purport that in the beginning, there is some pleasure when man and woman come together. But just in some time, that pleasure is finished. And then one becomes detestable to the partner. Therefore, one wants to keep changing. So here we find Uttar Kumar Bhumanjay simply riding his chariot on the praises of the palace maiden, going into a big, huge ocean of the Kaurav army. And now what happens when he faces the army is very interesting. Simply at the sight of the Kaurav army, Bhumanjay becomes terrified. And he says, even the celestials cannot fight this army in battle. And he just turns and starts running full speed. He jumps off the chariot and starts running. Virendranala feels that the chariot has become a little light. Looks behind and he sees that Uttar Kumar is running away. So he runs behind him. And Virendranala after some time catches him and chastises him. What kind of kshatriya are you? Why are you giving delight to the enemy by running away in battle like this? What will your father say? What will the palace maiden say? You made big, big promises in front of them. And Bhumanjay, still with his legs moving very fast, but because he was in the air in the hands of Virendranala, powerful Arjuna, he said, please leave me, leave me. He said, let the Kurus take my wealth. Let the men and women laugh at me. Let the cows go anywhere they like. Let the city be desolate. Let me fear my father. But I cannot enter the battle. Please, please, Virendranala, leave me. And then somehow coming out of the grasp of Virendranala, with his sword swinging on his side, he runs again. And again, Virendranala is there with his powerful arms and shoulders running, trying to catch him. At a distance, the Kauravas are having a good laugh. They're seeing that this chariot which had come with full speed stopped for some time. And the personality who is in the chariot behind, who came to fight, is now running away. And one eunuch-like person is catching him, holding him. And they were laughing like anything. But it was Drona who recognized. He said, wait, this personality who looks like a eunuch could be none other than Arjuna. Look at his shoulders, as huge and powerful like palace doors. Look at his arms. They are like huge serpents who will devour anyone who comes across them. It is explained that because Drona had such love for his dear disciple Arjuna, in spite of that disguise, he could immediately recognize Arjuna. On the other hand, Bhumanjay was requesting, please, let me go, let me go. The fact is that only one who lives can secure proper prosperity and happiness. Oh, dear Virendranala, when I get back, I promise you that I will give you 100 coins of pure gold. Please leave me, let me go. When I go back, I will give you 8 brilliant coins of made up of pure Vaidurya gems. In fact, I will give you excellent cars decorated with beautiful jewels and driven by the best of horses. I will give you 10 powerful elephants. If you just release me, please, please just release me. Arjuna said nothing. Simply dragged him to the chariot and sat him over there. Arjuna said, if you cannot fight, then let us swap places. You become the chariot driver and I will fight. Bhumanjay said, what? I become chariot driver, that is the job of a Shudra. Karna was called Sutaputra because he was the son of a chariot driver. Arjuna said, Shudra, you think you're a Kshatriya just now, what you were doing? And then after giving him some more chastisement, some more encouragement, he said, okay, I will hold the horses. At that time, Dronacharya spoke up when all the Kauravas were laughing at that sight which was going on in front of them. He said, I see ill omens all around me. Violent winds are whipping all around us and throwing gravel and sand on our chariots and horses. The sky is shrouded with darkness. The celestial weapons are jumping from our quivers. Huge black clouds are forming in the sky overhead. The horses are shedding tears. Jackals are yelling nearby. This is all signs of calamity. Karna spoke up. He said, why are all of you scared of Arjuna? You all may be fearful, but Arjuna is no match for me. After some time in forest, he must have become weak to come forward for a battle. In fact, just like a qualified Brahmana receives charity, he will receive thousands of my arrows very soon and will be extinguished, just like rain extinguishes fire. Let that Pandav come in front of me and I will destroy him. Thus, I will repay my debt to Duryodhan. Kripacharya immediately spoke up. He said, you foolish Karna. Wise men choose war only when all other means have failed and when the signs are favorable. Arjuna alone has vanquished the Gandharvas in a fight and saved you. He withstood the celestial hosts at the Khandava forest alone. Alone he defeated the Nivatakavachas and the Kalakanyas. Fearlessly he took away Subhadra in front of all the kings, in front of even Balaram, who had to be pacified by Krishna. And now, having practiced celibacy in the forest for 13 years, he has come out so powerful. Anyone who thinks that he can fight Arjuna alone is like a man who desires to swim the ocean with a rock tied to his neck. He's like a foolish child who wishes to take out the fangs of a poisonous cobra, an infuriated serpent, with his bare hands. Or he is like a foolish person who will pass through fire after smearing his body with inflammable oil and wearing silks and hoping to come out unscathed. Partha will move through our ranks like Yamraj with his rod on the day of judgment. Ashwathama, he came up and chastised Karna. He said, you have not done anything and you are simply boasting. Self-praise is not sign of great people. In fact, great heroes, after winning many battles and conquering great kingdoms, do not indulge in self-praise. Silence is the quality of those who are truly powerful. Don't you see that fire burns silently? Silently the sun shines and the earth, carrying all the moving and non-moving living entities, simply rotates without a word. Duryodhan spoke up. He said, you all are afraid of Arjuna? He is no match for Karna. In fact, his power is not even 1/6 of mine and Karna together. He can do nothing. Let us get together and fight. Now, there's something very interesting here. Arjuna, because of the curse of Urvashi, had actually got the body of a eunuch. It is not that Arjuna was simply dressing as Biryanala the eunuch. He was cursed to get the body of the eunuch. But still, Arjuna, because of the training that he had received as a martial art, in martial arts, and as a devotee, still remembered all those divine weapons and the messages that he had learned, the instructions that he had learned from Dronacharya. This is the power of training. Even though the body was changed,
Still, because he was trained as a warrior kshatriya and as a devotee, he still had a clear memory. It is so sad to see that now, sometimes children, they are trained to use computers, to learn about internet at a very young age in the name of education. His Holiness Gopal Krishna Maharaj was in Pune and he was speaking on this verse, Kaumarama charet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. Prahlad Maharaj says, right from the age of 5 years, in fact our Gopal's fun school starts at 4 years, says that we should train the child in Krishna consciousness. So, some might say this is child abuse. Forcing the child to come and pay dandavats in front of the deities, chant and dance, train him in all these things. At 4 years of age, this is a child. But then these very children of 4 or 5 years of age are sent to computer classes so that they can learn internet, and 96% of internet is what? Obnoxious things which should not be even watched. So, right from childhood, this training should be given rather than training the children in mundane life. If Krishna consciousness is imparted at that age, nowadays we see sometimes children, Govind Prabhu was telling that one of his relatives, she came to meet him after many, many years, and she brought her daughter along. And they were wearing clothes which were not worn by civilized people so much. So he was chastising this relative. He said, what is this? He said, in our childhood, our father would never allow us to wear these things. He said, now times have changed. Actually, I also wanted to wear these clothes. But because I was not allowed, at least my child can wear. So if this is the training we are given to the children, just because they are children, they can wear these clothes, they can go wherever they want, they can see whatever they want, then that remains with them. And when they grow up, they reject their parents. Is it a surprise? So many times, in fact, in every school, every college, wherever we go, they say, please discipline the children. Please force them to respect their elders. But if they are trained as demons, the training has gone deep, then how can we change them at that later age? So we find that although Brihanallah's body was changed, Arjuna's body was changed as Brihanallah, still that training was with him. And while the Kauravas were discussing amongst themselves what to do, face him or not, he told Bhuminjay, take me to this Sami tree and climb up and bring down that huge mass which is covered of object that you see on top. Again, Bhuminjay said, that mass, that object on top, that looks like a corpse. How can I as a Kshatriya do this job? And then Arjuna looked at him strongly. He said, okay. He ran up, brought that huge object, and then when he opened it, he saw powerful shining weapons. And those were the weapons of the Pandavas, which they had carefully kept over there when they had entered the kingdom of Virata to remain safe. When Brihanallah explained all these weapons to Bhuminjay, he was extremely happy. But he still had a doubt. So he requested Brihanallah that if you're really Arjuna, then you must know all the 10 names of Arjuna. Can you please tell me all the 10 names of Arjuna? And immediately he spoke up. He said, because I conquered many countries and conquered wealth, therefore I am called Dhananjay. I never return from battle without being victorious. And therefore I am called Vijaya. My horses are white. And therefore I am called Shweta Vahan. I was born when the constellation of Uttar Falgun was present, and therefore I am also called Falguni. Because I wear brilliant gems given by Indra, therefore one of my names is Kiriti. I am dreadful to behold in battle, and so my enemies, they call me Bibhatsa. I am Savyasachi because I have the power to draw the bow with both my arms. Being unapproachable and irrepressible, I am also called Jishnu. Arjuna is my name because I perform white deeds of great purity. And my father, out of affection
for that black complexioned boy also called me Krishna. Saying this, Bhuminjay was convinced and he fell flat at the feet of Arjuna and said, I am ready to follow your command. Arjuna immediately said, take charge of my steeds, horses, and he blew his conch shell. Now as soon as Arjuna blew his conch shell, Bhuminjay's feet started shivering and he fell again on the chariot. And he was not ready to get up. So Arjuna had to practically pick him up and convince him, encourage him. He said, now I am going to again blow my conch shell. Hold fast. So again he blew his conch shell hard. And this time the Kauravas were convinced that it is none other than Arjuna who has come to fight against us. Of course, there was a huge battle and Arjuna alone defeated all the Kauravas and they had to retreat. So when the king of Viratadesh, when he came back to his palace because he had gone for a previous war and he saw that his eldest son was not there on his seat, he said, where is he gone? So then people told him that the Kauravas had stolen our cows and we requested him to attack the Kauravas and he was convinced that just like Arjuna, he could defeat all the Kauravas in battle together. So he became very scared. The king just sank in his seat. He said, my child, how could he fight the hosts of the Kauravas together? In fact, I am going to only hear of his death today. But who has he gone with? And when he heard the name of Brihanalla, he said, finished. All is over. But right next to him, his chief advisor, Kanka, he was standing. And he said, don't worry. As long as Brihanalla is there, your son is safe and the Kauravas are defeated. And this made him even more angry and the king chastised him. After some time, the second messenger came in. And he said, I'm sorry, the first messenger came in. And he said, do you know that your son has defeated the Kauravas? They have retreated and he is coming back into the kingdom. The king was overjoyed. He said, wow, this is a great news. Let us celebrate. Call all the people and we will go and receive my son who is a great hero. Kanka said, naturally, if Brihanalla is with him, then what fear is there for him? Again, the king became very angry. So when all the celebrations were being arranged for, the king was so happy that he said, Kanka, we need to play dice together. I'm just so happy. He said, no. When I was in the palace of Yudhishthir Maharaj, I had seen that he played dice. When one is very happy, when one is very distressed, in lust, anger or greed, one should never play gambling. But if you insist, then I will be forced to play. And they sat to play the game of dice. And the king was so happy, he was betting, he was losing. Meanwhile, he just asked Kanka, I'm just so happy. What do you think? In how much time would my son have defeated all the Kauravas? And he said, well, as long as Brihanalla is there. And this time he became so angry. He said, why are you glorifying that eunuch in front of my own Kshatriya son? And he took the dice and hit Kanka straight on the face. Blood started pouring from his nose. And immediately Yudhishthir Maharaj held the blood in his own hands. Draupadi, Sendri, she came running with ice put on the face and the blood stopped. The second messenger came in. He said, your son is just about to enter. And the king forgot his anger, ran up to receive his son. And just before the messenger went, Yudhishthir told him, tell Uttar Kumar, Bhuminjay to come alone and make sure that Brihanalla does not enter the court. The reason was because Arjuna had taken a vow that apart from battle, if anybody makes Yudhishthir bleed and his blood touches the ground, I will kill that person. So if Brihanalla Arjuna would have entered the court and seen this condition of Yudhishthir Maharaj as Kanka bleeding, he would have immediately killed the king of Virata, Desh. So Bhuminjay comes in and he sees Kanka and he says, who did this to him? Who did this to him? Now interestingly, Arjuna had told Bhuminjay that do not reveal my identity in the court. You tell them that you won the battle. Only when Yudhishthir Maharaj
wants, we will reveal ourselves to the people in general. Just look at his solidarity to Yudhishthira Maharaj, his service attitude to his elder brother, who was of course a pure devotee of the Lord. Next day, when Maharaj Virata was about to enter his court, just before that, all the Pandavas wearing shining white clothes had already entered the court. Yudhishthira Maharaj was sitting on the throne of Virata. Next to him was sitting Bhima and Arjuna and Nakula and Sahadev. And when Virata entered, he was shocked. He said, "How dare you sit on my throne?" And then immediately Arjuna stood up. And he said, "This personality sitting here is none other than the virtuous Yudhishthira Maharaj. This cook who you call Vallabha is none other than Bhima. I am Kunti Putra Arjun. And these two personalities who are your cow keepers and your horse keepers are Nakula and Sahadev." And when Virat saw and he understood, he felt both happy and miserable. He was feeling miserable because these great personalities were working under him for one entire year in his kingdom, and he was happy because the Pandavas had chosen his kingdom to live in incognito and disguise. And he was also happy because he knew that very soon, because the Pandavas have now come out of exile, all the various allies of the Pandavas will come to meet them. And along with that, Krishna and Balaram, they will also come to meet the Pandavas. And thus their lotus feet will touch his kingdom. So we see that how Vijayadashmi is the day when the Pandavas, the virtuous Pandavas, the devotees of the Lord, defeated the entire host of the Kauravas headed by Duryodhan, who is the epitome of unfulfilled desire and lamentation and envy, so much so that he is destroying himself and he wants to destroy others. And ultimately we see that in the battle of Kurukshetra, the entire army of Kurus, anyone who sided with the demoniac Duryodhan was finished, however powerful they were. The other personality is Ravana, who is also the personification of unfulfilled desire. In fact, Ravana, as his name suggests, always made others cry. His heart was so hard. Because a soft heart, when others cry, then that heart also melts. Like we have seen in small children. You know, small children have such sensitive, soft hearts. If one child starts crying, other children also start crying. Nothing has happened to them. But just by seeing the other child cry, you know, if you go to these kindergarten schools, or even nowadays children go to schools when they are 1 year old, 1.5 year old also. Nursery, pre-nursery, play group, pre-play group, you know. Just drill them right from, you know, sometime now even just out of the womb into the school, you know. It'll happen, it's not so far away. Training. Success. So when we go to such schools, we'll find so much noise of children crying. Why is that? Association. If one child starts crying, their hearts are so sensitive, they will all just start crying. And if somebody smiles, they will also smile. That's why, you know, parents also, people also become like children. They'll also smile like that and try to make the child laugh. Because the heart is so sensitive that they can experience the emotions of what other people are going through. But Ravana was extremely hard-hearted. He would in fact take pleasure in giving pain to others. So much, when the heart is full of selfish desires, such unfulfilled desires, then it becomes hard. And another problem is, such a person cannot hear good advice from others, even if it is for one's own benefit. Ravana was advised by 13 persons to give up Sita. And he was told that she will be the cause of not only your destruction, but the destruction of your entire dynasty. But he could not hear good advice. It's just like a frog. If a frog is put in boiling hot water, immediately the frog will jump out, because it cannot bear the heat of the water. But this very same frog, if it is put in cool water, which is on a flame, and the flame is is heating the water, the frog gets heated, and is boiled to death before it realizes that it should jump out. This is what happens to one's conscience when one associates with selfish desires. The selfish desires are like that hot water, and the conscience is like that frog. Initially, if you're put in boiling hot water, then the frog will jump out. If one's conscience or if one's personality sees something horrible, immediately we will feel bad. If we see somebody suffering, one feels bad. But if one is too much absorbed with selfish desires, then after some time, one does not even feel bad to see other people suffering. In fact, I think it was Braj Bihari Prabhu who gave his Sunday feast the other day and said that probably no lectures in Bombay are completed without talking about the local trains. And the fact is that people speak about the local trains with such callousness that people are just falling off the local trains, just being packed like animals, being packed, taken for slaughter. People are suffering inside of suffocation, smelling each other's armpits. It's such a horrible situation. And if someone just falls off, he's just gone. Nobody even thinks about it. It's normal. It's okay. It happens every day. Because the heart has become so hard, one is just thinking of oneself. The grind of the day is just too much to take. Then one doesn't have any emotions or sensitivity towards others. So, this was the state of the heart of Ravana. In fact, it is said that it is criminal to steal a purse. It is daring to steal a fortune. It is greatness to steal a crown. As the blame decreases, as the guilt increases. If somebody just steals a purse, then such a person is a criminal. But if he has managed to amass a fortune by stealing from others, wow, daring person, great fellow. And if he's even more ruthless to steal a crown or kill a king and win a kingdom, such a person is really called great. Because the heart is dead. There's no guilt in the heart. Doesn't feel bad. And such persons are considered to be greater and greater. In fact, we had gone for one program where one lady was asking a similar question. That, you know, when we live in this world, we want to be happy and enjoy. But many times we experience negative feelings like guilt. So how should we give up our guilt? And we find so many books written about how to give up these negative feelings, negative emotions. But it is quite sad that these books talk about reducing these feelings of guilt and continue to enjoy in this world. Who feels guilty? One who is a thief, one who has committed wrong. This quotation explains that as the guilt decreases, one's glory is increasing. So people are trained today that cover up your guilt. Don't think about your guilt. Just do it and enjoy. And if you feel some guilt, then come join our course or read our self-help book and you will not worry about the guilt. But that is the life of the animals. They have no guilt. Guilt is that feeling which is given by the Paramatma, by the super soul in the heart, to remind us that we are doing something wrong. Why do we feel guilty when we copy in an exam? And if sometimes people copy in exam, the heart starts beating, the ears become hot, the hand starts sweating. But after some time, one becomes expert. You know, there is a smile on the face when the teacher comes, you know. Otherwise, it is seen on the face, you know. So the guilt becomes like that frog who is being boiled. He doesn't realize. So that guilt, one person becomes deadened to the voice of the Lord in the heart by covering up that guilt, by making the heart very hard. So the solution is not to cover up the guilt or to make the heart hard, but the solution is to align ourselves to the voice of the Lord in the heart. It's just like if our leg has a disease and we can't walk properly. In fact, it is so severely hurt that we can't even stand properly.
then the solution is to cure the leg, not just put an artificial covering or take a painkiller and then continue one's activities. Because externally one may be covered, but within, if the disease is not being met, taken care of, then it becomes worse. So the solution is not to cover up the guilt and live like an animal. But the solution is to actually listen to the voice of the Lord in the heart, who's reminding us that you're doing wrong. But 13 times Ravan was reminded by so many personalities. Maricha, his own wife Mandodari, Vibhishan, Kumbhakarna. In fact, Kumbhakarna was considered to be his loyal brother. So when Kumbhakarna was woken up from his sleep, Ravan said, now you must go and fight. You must save my honor. I want to enjoy Sita. So Kumbhakarna said, you fool, did you ask me before kidnapping Sita? Now you are asking me to help you? But still, because I am your brother, I will go and fight. And then before going to fight, he said, I am sure that I am going to be destroyed in the battle, but still I will give you some good advice before going. And he chastised Ravan for trying to kidnap Sita. And in this way, so many personalities chastised Ravan, was because his heart had become hard. He had no more could listen to the voice of the Lord in the heart. He could feel no guilt for doing all these wrong activities. Ravan was blind to his own destruction. Again and again, his sons were killed. His relatives were killed. His great army men were killed. His commanders were killed. And finally, Ravan himself came into battle on this very day of Vijayadashmi. It was a fierce battle. Ravan, he wanted to straight go to where Ram and Lakshman were. And he said, I will finish them off, and thus the battle will be finished immediately. So Lakshman came forward, and there was a powerful war between the two of them. But then Ravan threw a strong javelin which hit Lakshman straight in the chest, pierced his armor, entered into his body, and Lakshman lost his balance, fell unconscious on the ground. When Ram saw that, his love for Lakshman overpowered him, and he ran towards Lakshman and stopped the fight for some time. He started giving out huge wails in cry and lamentation. He said, Lakshman, my dear brother, if anything happens to you, what face will I show back in Ayodhya? What will I tell Sumitra? What will I tell all the other people in Ayodhya that my dear younger brother Lakshman, I could not save him, and now I have come back to Ayodhya without him? Oh, I will be censured. And in this way, Lord Ram breaks down in tears in his love of Lakshman. Fortunately, Sushena, who is the doctor of the monkeys, he comes and says that mountain which Hanumanji had brought from the Himalayas, in that there is a special herb called Sanjeeva Karani. And if that herb is found on the mountain, then I will be able to save Lakshman's life. And immediately the Sanjeeva Karani is brought, and gradually Lakshman comes to consciousness. Immediately two more herbs, Vishalya Karani and Sandhini, are administered to Lakshman, which not only heal Lakshman's wounds, but they also repair his bones. And Lakshman comes back. He's fully revived, and Ram embraces him. He says, Oh Lakshman, I would not care to live if you would have gone to the higher worlds, back to your own abode. And Lakshman says, my dear Ram, please do not speak these words. You have taken a vow to kill Ravan and enthrone Vibhishan as the king of Lanka. By hearing his vows, Ram becomes angered. He goes back into battle and decides to finish Ravan once and for all. There's a huge fight between Ram and Ravan. It's such a fight that they cover each other with so many arrows and so many weapons that they can hardly see each other. But Ram overpowers all the weapons of Ravan and attacks him in such a way then Ravan becomes unconscious. Immediately, Ravan's chariot driver, he takes Ravan to another part of the battlefield and saves his life. At that time, Lord Ram was on his own chariot, which was given by Indra. And Matali was the chariot driver of Lord Ram. Now in this fight, at one time, Lord Ram had chastised Matali that you are not actually maneuvering the horses properly. And the time when Ravan was not there in the battlefield fighting with him, at that time, Ram immediately came to Matali and said, "I'm sorry. You are not my chariot driver. You are the chariot driver of Indra. But still I chastised you. Please forgive me." And Matali melts by the loving, affectionate words of Lord Ram. He says, "I am your servant. I am simply here to serve you. But you are such a kind-hearted lord that you are giving me so much respect and affection." And on the other hand, when Ravan comes to consciousness, at that time, Ravan becomes angry. He says, "Why am I not on the battlefield?" And he looks around. He says, "Who brought me here?" And he catches the neck of the chariot driver. And he's about to kill him. And the chariot driver says, my lord, I just simply tried to save you." And he starts quoting so many verses from the scripture, proving that actually when the warrior is unconscious on the chariot, then the chariot driver can take him to another part of the battle just to save his life. And then he starts glorifying Ravan so much. So Ravan becomes pacified and he says, "Okay, I'm pleased with you. Take me back to battle." And then he goes back into battle with Lord Ram. In the meanwhile, when Lord Ram is expressing his exhaustion, Agastya Rishi comes over there to assist Lord Ram. And he says that today I want to offer you a very special mantra called the Aditya Hridaya Mantra. This mantra is so powerful that it is actually the spiritual energy from the heart of the Lord. In fact, it is the effulgence from the Supreme Vishnu himself. And he offers this mantra, Aditya Hridaya, to Lord Ram. See, Lord Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he is playing the role of the human being to set an example for us. To show that one must surrender to a guru. Agastya Rishi was like a guru who was offering him the mantra. So if one wants to kill the demon of Ravana, who is like the lamentation or the sinful desires in our heart which make us cry and other people cry, then one must take shelter of a guru who offers the mantra, the holy name of the Lord. That is the weapon that the Lord has come with in Kali Yuga. Yes, Lord Ram came with his bows and arrows. Lord Krishna came with his Sudarshan Chakra. Lord Narsingha Dev, he came with his nails. Varaha Dev came with his tusks. Parshuram came with his axe. But Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, has come with that invincible weapon in Kali Yuga with his own holy names, the 16-letter words of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Just like Lord Ram's arrows, we call them Ram Baan, they never come back without killing the enemy. Similarly, the Lord's holy names are fully equipped to destroy these demoniac propensities in our hearts. Like Sudama Prabhu mentioned, he said, Krishna has put all his energy in his holy names. Namna Makari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shakti. He has put all his energy in his holy name. Then why are we not putting our energy in chanting the holy name? Krishna has come with all his energies. Here I am to reciprocate with you. And when we chant Hare Krishna, the least possible energy, everything should be comfortable. And then we chant the holy names. Durdaiva Midrisham Iha Janina Anuraga. And therefore Lord Chaitanya, showing what the heart of a conditioned soul should be. Durdaivam, what an unfortunate condition. All beauty, knowledge, fame, strength, power, renunciation, all the opulences of the Lord have appeared in his holy names. He's invested all his energies in his holy names, and here I am, not ready to invest my energies in attentively chanting the holy names of the Lord. Yeah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Empowered with the mantra, Lord Ram, with renewed vigor, looks at Ravana in a distance coming and decides that this will be the last time he will stand on the face of this earth. When that battle began, Valmiki Muni writes, there is no comparison that I can give to this battle which has ever been fought previously. This battle can be compared to itself only. The final battle between Lord Ram and Ravan. Both the armies stood motionless, with their weapons held in their hands, in their fists tightly, eager to fight but couldn't move by the intensity of the fight happening between Ram and Ravan. Finally, Lord Ram took a razor-sharp arrow, a razor-headed arrow which was sharp and like a serpent which would devour whoever would come in front of it, aimed it at the head of Ravan and shot it with full might. The mystical arrow divided itself into 10 arrows and chopped off the 10 heads of Ravan. Interestingly, all the 10 heads immediately came up. Undaunted, Lord Ram took another such razor-sharp arrow and shot it, mystically divided it into 10 arrows and shot and chopped off the head of Ravan. All the 10 heads of Ravan. And they immediately came up. Now Ravan was such a mighty warrior that in spite of his 10 heads being chopped time and again, he was still continuing to fight. The fight was going on. So Lord Ram was wondering that after chopping off 100 of his heads, this person is still fighting with the same vigor and energy. This fight will never end. I can never kill him. And at that time, Vibhishan entered and told Lord Ram that I know how Ravan can be killed. He has been given a benediction that there is a pot of nectar in the heart, and this nectar very quickly rejuvenates any part of his body that is destroyed. So you must take that divine weapon which Agastya Muni gave you in the forest when you were serving him and empower it with that mantra, the Aditya Hridaya mantra, and shoot it at the heart of Ravan, which would suck up all the nectar, and thus he will be killed. So the Acharyas give the explanation that one may have a guru, and the guru may actually give the mantra, which is non-different than the Supreme Lord, to the disciple, but one still needs the association of the devotees. Vibhishan represents the association of the faithful devotees. Because in times of anxiety, in times of bewilderment, one needs counsel from superior Vaishnavas. In fact, one senior devotee told me something very interesting. And he said, this is the realization probably of most devotees who have spent a lot of years in their Krishna consciousness. He said that the very same advice that we give to people doesn't work for ourselves. It's very interesting. We may advise people, just control your senses. These senses, you know, they are uncontrolled, and that is the cause of your suffering. And you're not the body. Body? All anxiety, suffering is to the body. Your soul, transcendental, Sachid Ananda, full of bliss, ecstasy. This body is just like clothes covering. Even if it cuts, just like you leave clothes, leave body, finished. Don't be attached. However, when we go through the same situation, then we need to surrender to a Vaishnava to hear the same instructions. That is how the Lord has designed it. That was his realization. That it is a fact that we can actually help juniors, we can help the common masses. That's why a practicing devotee, experiences two different emotions.
On one hand, the practicing devotee is feeling some joy, some bliss of advancement in Krishna consciousness. The harassment of the senses is reduced. The material desires do come down to some degree, a large degree sometimes. And one feels a peace from trying to enjoy this material world. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, we are relieved from the burden of trying to enjoy this world. Maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimudhan. Foolishly trying to carry the burden. Who has given us the burden? Self-created duty. Personally, I have designed this burden for myself. And then I say, duty pe jana hai. Time ho gaya, I have to go now. Who has created the duty? Self-created burden. So, maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimudhan. The living entity, I lost the point. Anyway, so we were discussing that exactly. Now I was discussing how a devotee experiences two emotions in the heart. On one hand, a devotee knows that I can help others, and others are actually getting helped by my service, and I have spent so many years chanting Hare Krishna, and I'm seeing that there is a change in my heart. At the same time, a devotee feels that, am I really advancing? Krishna looks so far. I have to give up all material desires. But to give up all material desires looks like an impossibility sometimes. They just come up from nowhere. So the fact is that when we help others, then we are accessing Krishna's mercy, being instruments of Krishna's mercy, and offering Krishna to others. But when it comes to ourselves, then we have to surrender to senior Vaishnavas. And then we will be helped for the same problems that we are able to help others. That's why it is not a fact that we have made no advancement. Because even devotees feel depression. In fact, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj has given a very nice seminar on overcoming Vaishnava depression. Vaishnava depression is a different phenomenon than mundane depression. Now, why did he have to choose this topic? Because practicing devotees do feel depression. They do feel angry. They do feel frustrated. They do feel all these kinds of negative emotions which need to be addressed, overcome, and transcended. So we feel that how am I different from the materialistic fellow? He's also struggling so hard and he's also suffering in the material world. No, the difference is we have made some advancement and we can help others. But when we need help, instead of thinking that I am very advanced and just see I am not able to solve my problems, the design is that the Lord expects us to take shelter of the senior Vaishnavas. So Vibhishan came and told Ram that you must shoot at the heart of Ravan. At that time, Lord Ramchandra took out that arrow, that weapon which is the mercy of the devotees, who remind us to take shelter of the Lord and His holy names, which is the weapon for Kali Yuga. This arrow, its shaft was made of ether and was presided over by the wind god. Its plumes were presided over by the fire god. Its tip was presided over by the sun god. And its weight was presided over by Mount Meru and Mount Mandara together. Empowering it by the Aditya Hridaya Mantra, Lord Ram shot this arrow towards Ravan. Both the armies simply watched that arrow with open mouths. It pierced through the air, lighting up both the earth and the sky, and roaring like a tumultuous ocean, it streaked into the heart of Ravan and sucked out the nectar which was there in a pot in his heart. Ravan gave a huge cry, and soaked in his own blood, he fell to the ground dead. At that time, Mandodari and all the other queens, they came from the palaces and they started crying. Mandodari piteously started lamenting over the body of Ravan. She said, "O lordly personality, when you had conquered your senses, you had become so great. And when you allowed your senses to become loose, just see what happened. You have become a corpse lying in your own blood. At that time, Lord Ram came, consoled them, and told Vibhishan that you must perform the last rites of Ravan. Vibhishan said he does not deserve. He does not deserve that his last rites be performed. He was so sinful. Lord Ram, at that time, gave the secret of what it takes to actually forgive. See these great qualities of Lord Ramchandra. He said that the body is temporary, but the soul is eternal. And the soul is pure. Now that the soul has been separated from the body, the soul should not be condemned. Let the body have the honor of being performed the last rites deserved for a king, deserving for a king. So Lord Ramchandra, because he could see the spiritual aspect, he could see the soul separate from the body, and he gave honor and respect to that soul. Therefore, he could even forgive Ravan and give him the honor of having his last rites being performed. When people attack us, when people chastise us, as long as we are in the bodily concept of life and we see other people as bodies, we think in terms of I and mine, then it is very difficult to forgive. Even superficially, externally, we may try to adjust our minds. But unless we raise to a spiritual platform, we cannot actually deeply, really forgive people. So to conclude, to kill this Ravan, the demon of Ravan within our heart, we need three things. We need Guru, who was represented by Agastya Rishi. We need the mercy of Guru, which was that arrow which Agastya Rishi had given. We need the holy names which the Guru gives as a mantra. Just like Agastya Rishi gave the Aditya Hridaya mantra to Lord Ram, who was playing the part of a human being. And most importantly, we need the association of devotees who will remind us to take shelter of this mantra, take shelter of the mercy of Guru, and encourage us, enthuse us, inspire us, and convince us that we are blessed to have this mercy of Guru. Unless we are inspired, enthused, and blessed in devotional service, even though we have the greatest treasure, we will still behave like poverty-stricken beggars. Always absorbed in our own frustrations, depressions, anxiety. Therefore, one devotee, in fact, I think it was Devamrit Maharaj, who said that one should not imagine difficulties in Krishna consciousness. There are already so many difficulties. Why do you imagine so many more? What if this happens? Like one devotee had asked him a question that, Maharaj, you're talking about association of devotees. But if we go to a place where there is no association of devotees and there is no possibility to regularly contact them through telephone or internet also, and in case if we don't get any prasad also, and just in case if Maya is attacking us also, then what should we do? He said, why are you imagining so many difficulties? Are you going through that? So instead of fighting all our thoughts and Maya in so many ways, they are all like Ravan's unlimited heads. Each time you cut one material desire, another material desire comes. Another material desire we finish, another unfulfilled desire comes. So many desires we keep fighting. But then the devotee comes and says, hit the heart. Sarva dharmān parityajya mām ekam śaraṇam vraja. Mām ekam, surrender to Krishna. Rather than struggling so much to say no to Maya, one should struggle to say yes to Krishna. Then when we invite Krishna into our heart, we accept the mercy of Lord Krishna in our heart, Lord's holy names in our heart, then all these struggles will be put to an end forever. The demon of Ravan will be destroyed. Is it easy? Is it difficult? The process for us is to continue practicing. Keep in our minds these four things. Know for a fact that accepting the mercy of accepting a guru is the only way by which we can kill this demon in the heart. Just like Lord Ram had served Agastya Rishi. Second, to accept the mercy of Guru and chant the holy names of the Lord, the mantra that Agastya Rishi gave. To keep the association of devotees, like Vibhishan kept the association of devotees. Vibhishan instructed Lord Ram that now in this time,
when all these heads are being cut off but Ravan is not dying, hit the heart. And ultimately, following this process and practicing it. That's why in Vrindavan they have this saying, Dori avata javatare ladipe kare nishan. That means, you know, when sometimes ladies are taking out water from the well, then the rod or the rope, every day it's coming up and it's going down. Coming up and going down. Now that rod, how much power does it have? It's just thread. How much power does the stone have? It's so strong at the edge of the well. But every day, Duri avata javatare, every day it's coming up, going down. Ladi pe kare nishan. But it causes a nishan, a mark on that stone. Therefore, one devotee was explaining in the Japa Reform book, Satswarup Maharaj writes that under the waterfalls, you will find the stones are soft. The stones around the waterfalls are very hard, but under the waterfalls, those stones are soft. Now, our heart may be harder than stone, but the waterfall of Krishna's holy name is more merciful and raining more power and mercy than any other waterfall. So however hard our heart may be, if we just allow ourselves to be in the mercy of Krishna's holy names, in the association of devotees, then that heart will melt. And eventually the demon of Ravana will be destroyed and you will experience Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I think it is very late now. So, we'll stop here. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vijay Dashmi Dashera Maha Mahotsav ki jai.